City of Stonington. Mr. Premier, you talked originally when you started today about challenges. I'd like to put a challenge to you. As you know, I come from the local government sector, and we currently are going through a very poor period in terms of cost shifting at federal level, cost shifting at the state level. You talk about reform. We want you to put local government into one of your five areas, or six areas now, of responsibility. We are concerned about the cost shifting, particularly in infrastructure, ageing infrastructure in Victoria, particularly amongst rural councils. There's something like 15 rural councils and, in fact, outer suburban councils that are probably close to the poverty line. They will not be able to continue much longer in that situation. We currently have the drought, which is going to place enormous pressure on some of our councils. We have social development problems and certainly problems in planning. You want to institute 2030, yet you ask local government to basically cost and supply all of the infrastructure for that. So, Mr. Premier, I'm asking you, on behalf of local government, to put and think about very seriously how you might help local government in the future.
Well, thank you very much for your question. And two things. Number one, on a practical level, you're probably aware that with the Municipal Association of Victoria, we are undertaking work on that very task. That is to look at the viability of some councils, particularly in relation to difficulties in providing and a backlog of infrastructure. And it's the commitment we gave actually for our third term with the Municipal Association of Victoria. We put it into our policy proposals for local government, and we will implement that. That is to look at where the pressure points are, look at where the capacity problems occur, and try and address that in partnership with local government. But secondly, on a more broader way, and broader point, if you like, I believe that local government has to be a part of the reform and change we need in this country. It was for the second wave of reform. If you look at the competition policy reforms, the National Competition Council and the payments which occurred, local government was seen as an integral and important part of that reform and change. And I think it's been an important change, which has proved to be a much more effective and capable local government generally around the country as a result of that. One of the issues that we have raised constantly in Canberra is the need to have an incentive payment arrangement to look at those productivity improvements. For example, I think we were the only state in Australia in the competition policy payments which were paid to allocate a portion of that, which was at our discretion, for local government for the reforms and changes they undertook. Now that those competition policy payments have ceased, against the views of the states and territories, there is not the capacity to reward effort and to reward that productivity improvement. So we'd like to see that reinstituted. Nevertheless, things have passed. We've now put on the agenda the National Reform Agenda, as I mentioned here, and the majority of my speech was about that. Well, that agenda would be necessarily involving local government as we look at a higher skill base for the country, attacking some of the chronic diseases, looking at regulatory reform, looking at infrastructure bottlenecks, and looking at a cooperative effort between state and federal governments to achieve change. Local government has to be a part of that to achieve real change. We understand that. So in Victoria's case, you can be assured that in delivering those outcomes, we will be looking for partnerships with local government.
Premier Bill McCarg from Colleagues International. I'm concerned with one of your key objectives, and that is to drive the population growth of this state. Too often I find politicians concentrate on the quantity of life and not so much on the quality of life. We currently live in one of the most livable cities in the world, and we are projecting a population growth of another 1 million citizens by 2030. And the previous question really, in an oblique way, touches on the point that I want to raise with you. Already we have a state which is on the brink of control of water resources. We're on the brink of our capacity to supply power. We're on the brink of capacity to supply adequate public transport. And we're on the brink of a proper road network supplying and servicing our city. So what I'm concerned about is your drive for population growth. Have you done a study of the correlation between livability and growth? Because I don't want another million people coming to this town. I don't want to encourage more people coming to this town. If the quality of life, this is a serious question, if the quality of life deteriorates, we have enough quantity already. I'm asking you, are you evaluating and are you comfortable that we can maintain the quality of life whilst you're driving greater quantity of life?
Thank you, Bill. I understand completely your question, and it is an obvious one from the objectives that I have mentioned here today. Can I just start off from this premise that I think it would be irresponsible of a government to say that effectively Victoria, which is an attractive place to live, work and invest, is closed and cannot take any more. I think that would be really dropping the ball on what needs to be done in the state. What I've outlined is really a program to invest in the state, to improve the quality of life overall, by making sure we invest more in infrastructure, by making sure we increase our educational standard and skills, by making sure we have a better planned city and a better planned state, and making sure that we take into account the livability as we grow in the future. Whether we like it or not, there's going to be people that want to come to Victoria, and the demographic studies show that it's about a million extra people up until 2025. Our responsibility, certainly the responsibility of our government and collectively, is to account for that whilst maintaining and increasing our quality of life. So when you say that we're on the brink of problems with water, we're also on the brink of solutions to our water problems. For example, Ballarat, Bendigo and Geelong will have, by the end of next year, probably water security for the next 50 years. And Melbourne is not going to be far off with the plans to recycle and reuse water and have that capacity for the future. In terms of energy, the market here works better than any other place in Australia. We've actually grown our electricity generation capacity significantly by more than 1,000 megawatts over the last 7 years because the market is working well. And peak load now is being met by increased production, particularly from gas. But we will have the capacity to increase base load in the future as well through proper market arrangements. And in relation to transport, that is a challenge. That's why we set about in meeting our transport challenges to provide $10.5 billion over the next coming years, because we realised and accepted it was important to reinvest, to look at capacity issues on some of our lines, to create new lines, new rolling stock, new opportunities to improve the system. So one, I accept what you're saying about the livability of Victoria. That is paramount for us as well, for the government. But where we depart is whether in achieving the livability you throw in the towel and say, let's just provide for what we've got now and turn back any improvements or increase in population. We do not accept that. We believe there's a challenge ahead to invest in infrastructure, to invest in the livability and to plan that well in the future. And that's through water, electricity and everything else, and that's what we'll set about to do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Peter Johnston, City of Boroondara, Premier. Premier, could I ask you to expand perhaps on that before you answer the last question?
Well, is this a council push, is it?
No. Not at all, but as you know, local government's very close to communities,
of course,
Premier, and
of course
we get very concerned about some of these issues.
Yes.
And the water issue is a fundamentally important one to communities at present, where 3 out of 4 sports grounds are being closed down under restrictions. Given your point about a 20% increase in the population by 2030, and given that quite clearly Victoria's and particularly Melbourne's water resources are insufficient for the current population, climate change notwithstanding, can you talk a little bit more about the recycling initiatives that you foreshadowed? Because that must be massive new investment in infrastructure if it's to address the problems.
Yes, thanks, Peter, and there will be. And that's why we've released Our Water, Our Future, our plan to secure the water supplies in Melbourne and Victoria for the next 50 years. It includes piping water to where it's most valuable, and that includes piping for the Murray-Goulburn system into Ballarat and Bendigo, and that super pipe will be complete by summer of this year in Bendigo, and water restrictions will be lifted. By summer of next year in Ballarat, and water restrictions will be lifted. And also we will be providing water through aquifers and other connections in Geelong, which will see those water restrictions lifted there as well. In relation to Melbourne, we are obviously undertaking the business case now for the large water recycling project at the Eastern Treatment Plant, treating water to A-grade level, which would provide about 30% at least more water for Victoria more broadly. And, for example, could, if proved successful, and that is further to be examined, could, for example, replace water used by industry in a range of areas, including our generators, and free up that fresh drinking water for Melbourne more broadly. And you're talking about a big capacity of water. Our generators use about a third of all Melbourne's water supply every year, just for cooling. So you're talking about a large amount of water. We have a great capacity to recycle water to use that for industry and to free up enormous amounts of potable water for Melbourne and Victoria. And that's really where we see the future. Securing water, the regions are on stream for that to be achieved, and the work is starting now, and the work is underway. And in Melbourne's case, very soon, because of the recycling work, we'll have that security as well. And that will go, that goes to your earlier point about sporting ovals. Of course, what we want is the supply issue to be resolved so we don't have the same problem with those public parks and reserves in the future.
Premier, Bruce Matthews from Meinhardt Consulting Engineers. Having been based in Melbourne for over 30 years, I've not known a period of such industrial peace that we've enjoyed over the last 1 to 2 years. So my question is, why has this happened and will it hold?
Well, the answer is I hope it does hold. I think obviously it's a period of full employment, and you would expect the opposite to be true. That is that in the full employment, the labour has much more capacity to bargain than it does in a period of high unemployment. I think probably the uncertainty in the labour market more broadly is probably one of the factors. More generally, what's going to happen with federal legislation and what's going to happen with the workplace rules, that must be a factor. But also I think there's a maturity in the workforce now, which is important in Victoria, where we're seeing the projects should be delivered. We're past the stage of, and I hope, Bruce, this is more permanent. I can't give you a guarantee about this, but I think there is a stage now where there is a view that projects are important in the state interest. They need to be delivered. And, of course, that means that we need the cooperation of the workforce. And I think we're seeing more and more of that as time goes on. I'm hopeful that we can encourage that even more in the future.
Premier, Ivan Deverson, former Lord Mayor of Melbourne, who doesn't have a question on local government.
No.
Well, I do have two questions, and you could elect to answer one or both. We've had a lot of comment this morning on global warming, and we touched on the need for improvement in state and federal relations. Do you believe that there's a possibility of a national emissions trading scheme within Australia in the near future? The second question, which you might deflect, as you know and I know, that nothing would do more for the economy of Geelong than for their football team to win a premiership.
Yep.
What are you doing about it?
Right.
Switching to soccer.
Yeah, that's right. No, I haven't given up on Geelong. We'll pass on the second one, I think. Ivan, but it would do an enormous amount for the economy, there's no doubt about that. The confidence building there would last for years and years and years, and it would be much easier to get investment in Geelong as a result, I'm sure. So we're working on it. It's a work in progress. It's been a work in progress since 1963, but we're still working. In relation to global warming, the answer is yes. I believe that there will be a national emissions trading scheme in this country by the end of the year, whichever party wins the federal election. Why do I say that? Because clearly the Prime Minister has a task force reporting to him on pricing carbon and a national emissions trading scheme in May of this year. And I think every sign is there in some of the positioning that you've seen from the federal government to look at moving forward and having such a scheme for the country. Whether that is compulsory or voluntary is unclear. I think it's more likely to be a compulsory and universal scheme across the country. In the absence of that, The state and territory leaders have met together in the Council of the Federation and resolved in the architecture of the scheme that we've been developing for about 12 months to implement a scheme post-May if the Commonwealth does not proceed on recommendations from its own body for an emissions trading scheme. And the scheme that we would be implementing would see legislation coming in parliaments concurrently, state and territory government parliaments in the country in 2008, for implementation and starting in 2010. And it would see a significant reduction in greenhouse gas emissions as a result of the National Emissions Trading Scheme that the state and territories have committed to. So there is a default position that the we believe we have constitutional capacity and authority in moving together as states and territories to implement a national emissions trading scheme. We're more hopeful, though, that a national scheme would be in place, though, after the Prime Minister's task force reports. I think the public very much want to see carbon tackled. They want to see greenhouse gas emissions reduced. They believe that global warming is induced by human behaviour, and I think the evidence is irrefutable around the world. What they want to see is governments take action, and certainly I think we'll see action in this country before the federal election. If not, in Victoria's case, we will proceed to implement with the other states a national emissions trading scheme to price carbon for the first time and to have incentives for trading, which will operate, where you will be given by industry, obviously, a certain emissions. If you want to buy more, you've got to buy more by offsets, or if you're under, you can sell more into the market, and by that you'll see a significant reduction in carbon emissions over the next 20 to 25 years.
Mr Premier, just one question from me, if you don't mind. Yes or no, it'll be quite all right. Are you going to sign up to the Prime Minister's plan for the Murray-Darling Basin?
Not in its current form, because there's too many questions unanswered, and I want to, actually the national interest, our government does, but we have to have concern for two things. One is our irrigators, who are the most efficient in the country, and environmental flows and getting water down the Murray. And if the policy objective does not achieve that outcome, we have serious concerns. We have concerns that the proposal has not gone through federal cabinet. I've never heard of a proposal of $10.5 billion to change the constitutional arrangements around water ownership and resources and ceding of powers not going through an examination through federal cabinet. It's the first time ever I've heard of that sort of arrangement. We had material that was given us as premiers and territory leaders. I'm revealing matters to you now that may not have been picked up in the media. We went to meetings and we were given material across the table and asked to sign on the spot, which is just irresponsible. And we will do what is in the national interest. We'll do what's in Victoria's interest. We believe those two things can mesh. In its current form, it will not advantage Victoria in any significant way. What we want is water going down the Murray and extra water, and that will be achieved by surplus water and by targets and by incentives, not by paying, for example, irrigators in New South Wales for entitlements of water that they never have and effectively paying down those entitlements but not achieving any water savings. And that is not in the interest of the nation. So we want to have an arrangement which will advantage the Murray-Darling Basin long term, and if that means simpler regulation and single authority, we'll do it, but we can't sign up to a proposal which is half-baked as it is currently.